Beneath it all, I heard the moans and cries of despair of the people who had once called this place their home. These cries described a living hell on earth. I went to work, focusing my laser sight onto the billowing clouds of smoke that were beginning to drift over all the earth. This cloud would soon poison the whole atmosphere unless it could be contained. I began working around the edges of the clouds, burning out the blackness. By intently focusing my energy of laser sight, I was able to vaporize much of the smoke. In my inner hearing, I heard it hissing as it was transmuted into the purer elements of the air from which it had come so many eons ago. I began working in ever smaller circles, attacking the dark clouds of poison. They boiled ominously but became smaller, smaller until only the grayness was left. The air was purifying itself and would soon be fit for breathing again. Then I looked up and was horrified to see a great rent in the very fabric of the energy field of the Earth, the crystal energy system of the planet, also known as its energy grid. This tear had been created by the many bombs that had been dropped during the Persian Gulf War. The rent or tear in the Earth's energy field ran from northwest to southeast over what had been originally the fertile Mesopotamian Valley. This rent was now over the countries of Iraq, Libya, and Iran. What was worse was that the crack was slowly extending itself. It would eventually circle the entire Earth unless it was stopped. This grid is terribly important. It defines barometric pressure systems in the Earth and weather systems, major fracture zones and tectonic plates. It defines the migration routes of sea, land and air creatures, and points of magnetic anomalies, such as the Bermuda Triangle. It even defines cultural centers of mankind, both of the present and the past. Our Mother Earth was drastically in need of assistance. One of the skills my mother had taught me as a child was how to darn socks. She had explained how to spread the whole over a firm surface such as a darning egg. Then she told me to take loose looping stitches around the edges of the hole. Then take another row of stitches inside of the first row of stitches. Now, slowly and carefully, start bringing the hole together. I believed that this same technique should surely work even here. The only problem was that the hole was larger. My metaphysical studies in spiritual work had taught me that nothing was impossible. All you have to do is to focus thought strongly enough on it and you can bring it into existence. So, first I created a great golden needle with my mind. It may have been 3 feet long or 6 miles long, I really don't know. Then I threaded it with a great thread of golden light whose end was so long it disappeared over the edge of the earth. Next I went up above this energy grid of the earth and slowly I began to take long looping stitches with my golden needle and its thread of light. I worked all along the edges of the energy grid. I went round and round the hole with my golden needle and its long thread of golden light, strengthening the edges and bringing it back together ever so gently. Round and round I went. As I did so, the cries and moans that I had been hearing started to diminish. Suddenly I realized that these moans were actually coming from deep within the earth itself. Mother Earth had been in deep pain from the huge scar that had been cut in her skin by the war in the Persian Gulf. She had been burning from the on-fires and smoke, which had polluted the area afterwards. Our Lady was in dire pain. Next I began weaving back and forth across these loops of golden energy threads, carefully following the latitude and then the longitude lines of the Earth. I moved back to survey my efforts. It was working. Next I went above the latitude and longitude lines and began strengthening the great net of the crystal energy grid with the thread of golden light that came together over power points such as the Great Pyramid and Stonehenge. However, the rents at either end of this hole were still present, and they appeared quite unstable. I moved south and east and quickly whipped together the edges of the tear I had seen. The tear was right over the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. I brought the lips of the wound together. Great. The tear or rent was now staying together. It seemed very reasonable that if there had been a big rent in the southeast, there would also be something similar in the north. Sure enough, there was a tear in the fabric of the energy field there also. It extended up over Eastern Europe. I was able to quickly bring the edges of the frayed energy field together and sewed it back together with my golden needle and golden thread of light. Phew. Yet I could still hear moaning coming from the earth. What now? I looked down to the east at the Caspian Sea that at the present time borders three countries, Turkmenistan, formerly part of Russia, Iran and Turkey. This is where the moans were coming from childhood. I have always felt a kinship, a love if you will, for that area by the Caspian Sea, particularly on the southeastern edge. This was in spite of the fact that I have never traveled there. Starting from the lower east side, I looked deep into the depths of that once beautiful sea. There was an awful blackness there in the bottom of the sea. It was so very depressing, particularly in the middle part of the lower curve of the sea, the southern end. I looked into its depths and was shocked at what I saw. There was a huge being living at the bottom of the sea, which was black and slimy looking. It didn't resemble Nessie, the Loch Ness monster by any means. It was huge, maybe miles across, and was the very personification of evil. It was horrible. Naturally, its influence affected everyone who lived along the edges of the sea. Its dark energies filled everyone with depression and despair. It limited out the joy that anyone had tried to express and simply consumed it. Most of the residents along the sea had no idea that it was there or what it really was doing. Fishing had almost come to a standstill. The fish simply couldn't live in these waters. There was a great deal of 20th century pollution from oil wells and runoff from manufacturing from the northern end of the Caspian Sea. No one really understood what had happened. Older fishermen told of the days when the great Caspian Sea had been full of fish called sturgeon. There had been plenty and they had fed the people there. Their grandchildren found their stories hard to believe. All of this I knew in an instant. I focused my laser sight on the evil being beneath the waters. This is an ability to see into the more exotic energies of Earth. It is still somewhat unique on Earth, but this ability will come to many more people as time goes by. Still, I knew I was going to need some help. I called on Archangel Michael for assistance. In a moment I saw the famous Sword of Blue Flame beside me. What do we do now? Michael just stood there with shoulders shrugging. Whatever you want, I heard. Well, this big evil being at the bottom of the sea doesn't belong there. I want to get rid of him, I said. I'm going to need your help to cut through all the evil, Michael. Here we go, I thought. Michael was at my side as we dove into the sea. I could see the Sword of Blue Flame was slashing everywhere. You, there in the bottom of the sea. Come out of there. You aren't supposed to be there. Leave and leave now, I commanded. I could feel a heavy sense of evil coming from the bottom of the sea. It fairly shook the land. No. This is my home. This is where I have always lived. You can't make me leave here. It sounded ominous. I considered the whole situation for a minute. I knew that I was in my astral body, and because of that, I knew that nothing could hurt my physical body. Besides that, Archangel Michael was right beside me. So I pulled together all the mental and spiritual energy I could master. You have no right to be there in the Caspian Sea. It is not your home. You came from somewhere else. Now leave. I will not. And it dug its slimy tentacles into the bottom of the seabed. Come on, we've got work to do, Michael. And mentally I dove deeper into the sea. Despite its blackness, I knew where the tentacles were attached. I began cutting them loose with laser energies coming from my eyes. Michael was right at my side doing the same thing. Soon every tentacle was cut loose. By the power of Jesus the Christ, I command you to leave this beautiful sea. Leave and never come back. Never touch the seas anywhere on earth again, I commanded in as thunderous a voice as I could master. The huge being shot up out of the water. It looked for all the world like an octopus shooting itself forward with its tentacles. There was a rumble of thunder. Then it disappeared above me. I went down to the bottom of the sea to check, and there was still another slimy being down there. It was hanging on tightly to the seabed. Then I focused on it, and with sharp cuts of the laser beam from my eyes, I made short work of the tentacles. I commanded it to leave also. I looked again, and there was still a third slimy black being hiding at the bottom of the sea. This one was by far the largest one of all. Leave these waters, now, I commanded. No, I won't, came back in an equally thunderous voice. Yes, you will. By the authority of God, and in the name of Jesus the Christed One, I command you to leave this earth forever. There was all enormous whoosh and it came out of the water shooting past me into unknown regions. The water was slowly retiring to its natural beautiful blue color. I went down beneath the surface one more time to see if there was any tentacles remaining that might regrow. I swept the area with the beam of my laser sight and cleaned up the bottom of the seabed of any of the remaining tentacles. When I came back up to the surface of the water, I heard what sounded like the voices of happy little children. The voices came from water breaking along the edges of the shore and turning into white foam. "Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you," was coming out of all the bubbles along the shore. Now the sea was returning to its original beautiful blue that I had always associated with it. There were strings of pearls around the edge of the shore that were formed as the water broke into foam along the shore. This seemed to be a good night's work, so I went back home to my own bed. Immediately I fell into a deep and dreamless sleep. Later I learned that Adros had checked the visual documentary record up on the mothership of that night on their 3D TV. He saw what had happened. He confirmed that I had pulled the crystal magnetic grid back together and stabilized it. He had actually seen the black and evil beings depart from the Caspian Sea. I was informed that not only had I removed them from the sea, but that I had shot them completely out of Earth's atmosphere, never to return. Even Adros was impressed by what I had done. These beings had been installed by some evil A's who had their own agenda for the Earth. This was more than 50 years ago, and those dark and evil beings had been there ever since at the bottom of the sea. They were maintained by the pollution from manufacturing runoff and by the dregs from the unprocessing as well. A portion of this great inland sea had turned red from the sulfur generated by the unprocessing. As it dried, it became yellow, but was still poisonous. Now that these beings had been ejected from the sea, the people who lived beside the Caspian Sea could begin to regain the joy that was truly their birthright. Without sounding too much like preaching, I wanted to tell everyone this story of the Caspian Sea. It is now gradually starting to purify itself as fresh water flows into its northern end. Someday the sea will regain its former beauty. There was an article in the May 1999 issue of National Geographic magazine telling about the pollution that has gathered on its surface and on the seabed in the last 50 years. The discouragement of the people who live alongside it was apparent for all to see. However, it is very important that everyone reading this understand that there is much that they can do for people and places all over the world from wherever they are located. Miracles can be set in motion just by using concentrated thought and by prayer. Note: there is more information about this crystal energy grid in the book Pyramid Energy by Mary and Dean Hardy, and Marjorie and Kenneth Killick. Chapter 12. Mexico City Gas Explosion. One evening while I was home listening to the television, I heard about the sudden and unexpected gas explosion in heart of downtown Mexico City. It was totally unexpected and there were many casualties. I was horrified and shocked because I have often traveled to Mexico and I love this land and its people. As soon as I possibly could, I lay down on my bed and adjusted myself to the mode to go up to the mothership. I was sure the healing teams would be busy with the casualties from the explosion. I was right, there were injured people everywhere with much moaning and groaning. The healing teams were stretched to the limit. These people had been caught in the explosion and blown upward, and the Pleiadians had caught them up in the blue transporter beams. They had been brought aboard the ship instantaneously. I was late in arriving, but I rushed toward a healing team that was working on a hysterical man in one of the hallways. "What do you want me to do?" I supposed they might want me to pick out fragments from wounds as I had often done before for battlefield casualties. Something different this time, I heard telepathically. I felt someone grab me around the waist and briefly halt my travel forward. I looked down and saw a small hand strapping a little box about the size of a pack of cigarettes around my waist. "Now go talk to him. Calm him down. He's much too hysterical for us to work on. He keeps jumping around and we can't use the instruments on him." I glanced up at the wall where a television screen showed a replay of what had happened when the transporter beam had captured him during the explosion. He had been right over the P-91 top of the gas that exploded. I saw him lying on his back being propelled straight up by the force of the explosion. In the video he was at about the level of a second-story window and still rising. Pieces of a red truck were being propelled into the air right along with him. His left arm and left leg had been blown off in the explosion. He had seen them traveling sideways away from him. This was the reason for his hysteria. He knew he was dying. I turned away from the television screen and heard him screaming hysterically, "Madre! Ave Maria! Madre!" I swallowed hard, trying to remember what I could of my limited knowledge of Spanish. Then it kicked in. I said, now, you must be quiet. Don't thrash around like that. The doctors here are trying to help you, but they cannot do anything with you thrashing all over like that. Oh, I'm dying, my leg is gone. My arm is gone. I'm dying." He was crying and he tossed his head from side to side. "Be quiet." I hissed at him. "Be still. Don't you even move." I moved in close to his right side and stood over him. I leaned over him and said fiercely, "Stop that crying." That finally got his attention. He opened his eyes and stared at me. His eyes widened and he whispered intensely, "Madre, is that you? That's better, now you be quiet. These doctors are here to help you. They will put you all back together again. You lie still. Do you hear me? How can they help me? My arm is gone, my leg is gone." His voice trailed off as he looked at the team of healers working on him. Their actions puzzled him, for some of the healers were working on his auric field, repairing the levels within the aura which had holes blasted in them by the explosion. They worked with energies he could not see, molding the energies gently with their hands. They were bringing the different levels of his aura back together so it could be used as a pattern for his body and for the healing of the physical body that was to come. I had seen this process often with the battle casualties of the Persian Gulf conflict. Another part of the team had tiny instruments, like a pen or paintbrush. Two of the team worked on an arm and another three team members worked on his leg. They were delicately painting his nerves and blood vessels back in place in accordance with the auric patterns. The nearest things to these instruments that we have on Earth are laser instruments used for surgery. However, these instruments did not destroy tissue as a laser does, they restored it. I had seen the healing teams at work many times doing these things, so I really didn't need to watch this time. My job was to keep this man calm so the team could work on him. "Hold still there now, so these healers can help you. There isn't any pain, none at all." "Why?" There was amazement in his voice. "That's right, there isn't any. Now you can see why it is important that you lie still. If you lie still, there won't be any pain. No more twitching around like you was doing a moment ago." I said sternly. I had to keep talking. "I'm not going to die." He barely whispered it. "Not if these doctors can help it, but then you have to help too, you know. You have to be very quiet and do what they tell you to do and you'll be all right." I had to just keep talking and keep his attention on me and off his injuries. "They have special ways to keep pain from you, and ways to stop bleeding too, so you will be all right." The healing team had almost completed their work. They wrapped his arm and leg close to his body to stabilize them during the time to come. They were beginning to wheel him out towards a recovery bay. As he passed, he looked up and said, "You won't leave, will you? You'll come back, won't you?" He seemed worried. "Of course, I will be here anytime you need me. All you have to do is ask. It is important now for you to rest and start healing your leg and your arm." "Oh," and he looked up in surprise at his own body to see his arm and leg wrapped tightly against his body. "Don't go away." He leaned his head back to look at me as they wheeled him away to recovery. I turned to a female staff member who was taking the little box and a belt off my waist. I realized that this was one of the translator boxes like some of the higher-ranking beings on the mothership sometimes wore when diplomats from other ships came to visit. My thoughts and words had been instantaneously translated into Spanish, and his words had been translated back into English for me with the help of the little box. On Earth, our computers are only now beginning to be able to laboriously translate the written words between languages. Why was I able to get him to pay attention to what I was saying so well? I thought I would have to really use some psychology on him, But everything worked out easily. Why? My helper grinned at me. Look at yourself in the mirror. I walked up to a mirror and gasped at what I saw. My face was that of a much older Spanish woman, deeply tanned. There were deep creases from nose to chin in the shape of a triangle, and my eyes were not my own eyes of green, but were deep dark eyes of black. My hair was black with streaks of grey. I was wearing a woolen shawl that was mauve in color, and I had on a long black skirt. My assistant was trying valiantly to contain her mirth. We reached down into his memory bank and pulled up the image of his mother. Then we slipped that image over your head and gave you her voice as well. He is certain that his mother was here while he was being put back together. Later he will have a wonderful story to tell about seeing his mother up here in some great hospital, that is, if he is allowed to remember it all. She was delighted at my astonishment. That's truly amazing. And here I thought your technology was just limited to the instruments of healing. But you are actually able to reach into his mind? Don't you have to have his permission to do this? The law of non-invasion of privacy was suspended for the moment, because it was for his greater good, for his healing. Don't forget you were an instrument of his healing as well. Without your help, the team of healers wouldn't have been able to get him to hold still long enough for them to work on him. It's all been done here before. You just haven't seen it at work until now. She turned to go, then smiled at me and left the room. I looked back in the mirror. Gradually the face of the Spanish woman began to fade and my own image reappeared in the mirror. I was left to wonder once again at the great compassion and wisdom of the beings that inhabited this great mothership. This huge spaceship has been in a constant orbit high above the Earth, for longer than I could even imagine. It was part of a great fleet of spaceships which have come to help stabilize Earth in her orbit and to help the inhabitants of the planet. These huge spaceships will remain to assist the Earth through her coming changes and help in the birthing of the new planet Earth into the fourth dimension and even higher. For the most part, these ships are invisible to ordinary human sight, unless, for their own good reasons, they decide to let themselves be seen. We here on Earth are spirit beings first, and physical beings second. The love that is extended to us from the beings on these spaceships is almost impossible to imagine unless you really try. Then it is easy. I kept checking back at regular intervals on the man over the next few days. I learned that his name was Hector. He had a round face and wonderful dark curly hair, some of which dropped down over his forehead. P95 He smiled from ear to ear whenever I appeared. Of course, I always wore the translator on my belt and I wore the costume of his mother's face. I always pretended to frown and check on how he had behaved. The healers informed me that he had been a model patient and would soon be returning home. He would have full use of his arm and leg. The only things that he would have to show for his injuries would be a thin red line around his shoulder and a thin red hue around his leg where they had been reattached. In time, even these would disappear. One day when I went up to the mothership during sleep time, I discovered he was gone. He had been placed back at the location of the gas explosion, behind some rubble. They had allowed some of his bruises to remain to account for the explosion, because he had had to stay so long up in the mothership waiting for his wounds to heal. It had been necessary to bend the continuum of time backwards and then place him at the site of the explosion only a few hours after it had happened. It had also been necessary to wipe most of the memory of his healing and his stay up in the mothership. The only thing he remembered was a happy memory of his mother being with him at the time of the explosion. Later, when he was discovered behind a pile of rocks, everyone was amazed. They thought it was very strange that he had so few injuries. He couldn't even tell them how he got behind the rubble. He kept asking about the truck he had been working on. It was a red truck. He had been helping a friend repair his truck, and now neither the truck nor his friend could be found. He could not be convinced that both the truck and his friend were not somewhere in the rubble and that his friend was alive. They were in the rubble, of course, but his friend was dead. It had not been possible to save his life. I was informed that the reason Hector's life had been saved was that his aura had identified him as a good person and worthy of the assistance of those who were on the mothership. In truth, this is the only passport that is required to come aboard the mothership. There may be those human beings from Earth who tried to come aboard a Pleiadian mothership during their astral travels who simply want to have an exciting adventure. If their motives are based on greed or power, they will find the entrance blocked as surely as if they hit a steel door. Up on the mothership, the aura of a being from Earth is easily read. Deceit is not permitted among those who are granted permission to come aboard the mothership. It would be too disruptive to all of the other beings on the spaceship, and they will be blocked from entrance. Fame or fortune will not be found by traveling to Pleiadian mothership. You will find love and harmony among different beings that work together for their common good. It is a grand and glorious place, and I loved working there. Chapter 13 Science Classes. One evening as I arrived on the mothership, I was greeted by the lady I had seen in the control room the first evening I had arrived. She had also been my guide at first. "We have some very interesting classes here that explain some of the technology that you have wondered about. We offer you a serious invitation to sit in on these classes. They will remove many of the things that have puzzled you since you came up here on the mothership." She was wearing that wonderful silvery jumpsuit with a long flaring skirt over it. "That sounds like a wonderful idea," I said. "You know, you have been very kind during all my visits up here." I was a little embarrassed, "but I really should ask you your name." "My name? It is Behan Torslea." She just smiled and continued walking. "I don't think I can manage getting my tongue around that." I shook my head. "Can just call you Behan?" She chuckled and nodded. "That's close enough." She took me down a hallway where many doors opened into classrooms. "Other earthlings are beginning to file into the room," she pointed out to me. "This room would hold about 50 people. It had tiered seating so everyone would have an unobstructed view. I found a seat in the front row and waited for the class to begin. I was surprised to see Bian move up to the front of the room and begin the lecture. "Gravity seems to be a mysterious force for those of you who live on Earth. It is our intent to lift some of the veils on your understanding about this ever-present but little understood force on your planet. First, you have to accept that for every action, there is a reaction. When you study electricity, this is translated as positive and negative, proton and electron. One condition does not exist without the other to one degree or another. When they are present in equal amounts, an object is said to be at rest. When they are present in equal amounts, there is movement. You know that electrons flow down a wire toward a positive pole and the rest is electricity." She held up her hand. "Now try to stay with me on this. If we put electrons below an object and protons above the object, the electrons will chase after the protons and this will cause the object to rise." She waited until she saw a few heads nodding. "This is the simplified version of how our round craft without wings can lift off the surface of your Earth. Remember that there is no sound generated by the movement of electrons. These same electrons govern the movement of the craft without wings through your Terran skies. These are the ones you call flying saucers. This movement is an entirely different principle than the lift provided by air into the wings of your aircraft that the majority of your earthbound aircraft use now." I couldn't help but flinch when she used the word earthbound. "The only thing that is difficult for your scientists on Earth, which we here call Terra, to comprehend is how to control the amount of these electrons and their location below the craft." Here she smiled. "We were very amused when one of your scientists first made the discovery about the power of electrons. Re let loose a torrent of electrons underneath the round craft he had designed, but he could not control the quantity of the electrons nor their direction. There were far more electrons generated than he had ever imagined, and he was unable to turn the flow of electrons off. As a result, his craft took off from the Earth and headed straight up into the atmosphere of the Earth until he lost sight of it. Top 100 left on its own, it would have simply continued in that direction, until it ran out of fuel. That could have taken a long time. However, its flight was erratic and out of control. We had time watching it for a while. But then we had to move in and take it over by subtracting some electrons from under his experimental vehicle. We were able to capture it, and turn the fuel system off. We returned it to Earth in a different location where it became quite a curiosity. He was very embarrassed by the disappearance of his wonderful experimental craft. The news reports about it were mostly hushed up, unless you know where to look in the newspapers for them. She turned a quizzical look on us all. That might be a good project for all of you in this room to look up in some of your more obscure scientific reports when you get back down to Earth.